And please help me give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Rich L. from the Quakertown Group.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Rich and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Quakertown Group. We meet on Thursday night, 8:30 at St. Isidore's. All are welcome. If you're ever out on a Thursday night, don't have a place to go, stop on by. I think it's a great home group. AA suggests that you have a home group. If you don't have a home group, you know, I suggest you get one, you know, and if you don't think your home group is the greatest, then my suggestion is you stay right there. Don't go ruin somebody else's. That's from a speaker I heard, Jack Sullivan. He got sober in 1962, but I listen to a lot of speakers, and I usually have something going on at my house, usually with the speaker, because I'm an alcoholic, and I got to remember that every day. You know, it's suggested that you wear a suit and tie to this event. Thank God it's only suggested. People know me as Philly Fritch, and I wore my 24 tonight because the 24 is what I'm all about. I try and work a 24-hour day program and keep everything in the 24. And I learned that from a guy named Gus from Hotsville. He passed a couple years ago, but he taught me the 24-hour program. And he always said that you can't get more in a day no matter what you do. So I'm here to tell you a little bit about me, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I was born into a normal home. I think I was born in 1960 in Philadelphia. And my earliest memory of alcohol was my parents used to drink daily. So drinking was normal to me, but I remember back in the day they had these long, thin glasses, and they started out with 2 quarts of beer in the, as my father called it, the icebox. but, you know, it had a plunger type thing, and they would pour a beer and then put the plunger back in, and then, you know, next thing you know, they pour another, put the plunger back in. But I remember that, and they started out with 2 quarts of beer, and I'd say I was probably maybe 6 or 7 years old, and from that 2 quarts went to probably a case, and then to 2 cases, and when my mom passed in 1992, there was 3 cases on the left-hand side of the garage and 3 cases on the right-hand side of the garage. So that kind of tells you that alcohol is a progressive disease, which is what the big book talks about, you know. And I know that when I started out, I wasn't drinking, you know, where I wound up. You know, when I wound up, I was close to a 30-pack a day. And I'm not a big guy, but I just like to drink. And, you know, so, I mean, I definitely earned my seat here. You know, it's like I say, my parents drank every day, so it wasn't abnormal for me to, once I started drinking, I was allowed to drink in the house. And same thing with smoking. When I started smoking, I was allowed to smoke in the house. And that was a big deal back then. I mean, talking back in the mid-70s. And but it was, you know, it was acceptable. And I started daily drinking probably when I was 17 years old. I got my license when I was 17, I think. And I can tell you my license didn't last long, because I'm still longer without my license than I have. And I got my license back in 2002. I lost it in 1979 for, well, whatever. You know, but apparently they call that a habitual offender, because every time I got caught, I was usually speeding. And, you know, it 3 times within a 5-year span is habitual, and they hit you with up another 5 years on your suspension. So it's like I got 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, 5 years, 5 years, 2 years, 2 years, 5 years. So I wasn't even supposed to have my license back till I think 2014, when I got it back in 02. But I hired a lawyer and It's funny, I owned a business, and when I went to buy that business, or the franchise, the franchisees or the franchisor, it never did any background investigation on me. It was the insurance company that found out that I didn't have a license. Because when I went to get my garage keeper's liability insurance, they were the ones that said, you don't have a license? I said, well, technically, no, but whatever. I wound up buying a Sunoco station, and I bought that in 95, and I think I drank that away by 2005. And, I got two DUIs. My first one was in 91, and I quit drinking for 90 days. And I said, see, I'm not an alcoholic, because I can quit drinking anytime I want, and that just proves it. But on that 91st day, I picked up a drink, and I went out for another 17 years to prove that I am the alcoholic that I know to be today. And I know for me that my off switch is busted. I know that one is too many, and 1,000 is not enough. I remember, what happened to me was I got pulled over on a DUI stop. It was the night before Thanksgiving 2007. I was driving my van. I had just pulled a shift at P.J. Willihan's. I was the first one there from our Scott Mazda. And I was the last one to leave from Scott Mazda. And I think I drank for like maybe 9 hours, which is, not that bad, but, they closed the bar. And so, I was coming home, and I remember coming down 309, and I made a left on the Quaker's Way. I made a right in the Laurel Court, like I always do. And as soon as I passed my house, which is on the left-hand side, there was a car behind me, and I figured, well, no big deal. I'll just whip it up around the mailbox and come back and park my van. Well, as soon as I passed my house, the lights came on. I was like, seriously? So I know how it is. When the cops put their lights on, they really want you to pull over. Trust me. They want you to pull over, like, right away. Because if you don't, apparently, they have a problem with that. And I know that from experience. So I pulled over right away. And, he said that the reason that I stopped you is because your registration is expired. I was like, yeah, I knew that to be true. And he said, you're out of inspection. Yeah. Let me just say that I am an inspection mechanic. And, it is what it is. I mean, my van wasn't inspected, and there was no emission test on it either. He asked me for my driver's license, and I did. I didn't have it on me, so I gave him my number, and he's like, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, that's my driver's license number." He said, "Well, where's your license?" I said, "I don't know, but that's the number. It's legal. How do you know your number? I use it every day." He asked me if I was drinking. I said, "Yeah," and he said, "How many do you think you have?" And I said, couple? And he said, well, how many is a couple? I said, two. Two would be a couple. Yeah, two. He said, you want to step out of the van and do the field sobriety check, stupid human tricks? And I was like, well, yeah, sure. So he had me do the white line, and I failed that miserably. Fortunately, there were cars on either side to catch me, so that was good. And then he's like, do the one leg thing, and then this and that, and next thing I know, I see another cop pull up. And I was like, is that guy here for me? He's like, yeah, Joint Task Force, Quakertown, Richardtown, big night for DUI. I said, all right, cool. I said, feel kind of special. he said, well, you're under arrest for, we're going to arrest you for DUI. I said, all right. He said, no worries. I said, can somebody go knock on the door? Because I'm home. You know, I didn't park my van in my parking spot because I didn't know who was behind me, and I told him I was going to whip it up around the mailbox and pull it into the parking spot. But he said, don't worry about that. It'll be taken care of. I was like, well, I said, she's home. You know, if you just go knock on the door, you know, she's home. I said, that, you know, she'd come out and park the van. Don't worry about your van. I said, all right. Next thing you know, I see another cop come. I was like, it's like, what's up with that, man? I mean, it's like now there's three cops, you know, I mean, but there was, I think there was three of them and one of me. So yeah, there was three cops. And, you know, it's like, he said, I was under arrest for DUI. I said, yeah, I said, he already told me that. So he put my hands behind the back and they cuffed me. And I was like, okay. I said, what are we going to do with my van? He said, don't worry about your van. I said, well, I am worried about my van. I said, can't somebody just go knock on the door and, you know, get the old lady and she'd come out and park the van. He said, don't worry about the van. I said, I just told you. I said, you know, I'm kind of worried about the van. You know, can't you just, you know, he's like, you're under arrest for DUI. I said, I know. He said, well, and get in the car. I said, I really don't want to get in the car until you tell me what we're going to do with my van. And that's when he said, get in the effing car. And I said, oh. And everything was fine, well, and good up to that point. I mean, everybody was, you know, we were civil, I thought. And then I said to him, I just told you, I don't want to get in the effing car until you tell me what we're going to do with my effing van. And then the next thing you know, I hear him say, get the taser. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm in handcuffs, you know what I mean? It's like, get the taser. Well, the next thing you know, they hit me with that lead thing, doubled me over, and two of the cops were feeding me through the passenger side as the cops coming through the driver's side with the taser, and he's tasing me twice. And I was like, oh, geez. You know, so after that point, it was not good. My language was atrocious. And I can tell you, before I came into AA, my language was atrocious. And but that's something that, you know, I've tried to change. Normally at meetings, you won't hear me drop curse words or anything like that. But outside the meeting, I'm still a mechanic and I still use the F-bombs. But, you know, I try to maintain as much as I can when I'm in a meeting, or, if, you know, especially when I'm in the church. You know, I respect where I'm at, and learned that here in AA. So that night, it was a bad night. When I got to the hospital, I asked the nurse if I could see a doctor, and she said, well, why? And I said, because they pummeled me. You know, I said, I'm not feeling too great. You know, I was like, can I see a doctor? So, you know, they had me handcuffed to the bed, and you know, they came in, the doctor's like, well, can I take the handcuff off the bed? And I was like, yeah, I'll behave, you know, whatever. I wasn't that, you know, having any problem with the doctor. It was cops that were a problem. But, they checked me out, wound up that I broke a rib, or they broke a rib. But, that night, the old lady came, she picked me up, and she had to call her son, who at this time was living over in Perky, Owenville, and so he had to come over from Perky, Owenville to watch my daughter, who was 9 years old. So it was kind of a fiasco to get everything worked out to come and get me at the hospital. I could have walked home, but, you know, whatever. And so that next morning, she came to me and said, you know, I don't want to be associated with you at all today. I'm going to my parents for Thanksgiving. I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear about you. You know, you're just, I don't want to be, just go. And don't bother calling. Don't do anything. I was like, all right, whatever, you know. So when I got home, of course, my van was towed away, you know. And, you know, that was, they towed it over to Richland Town. And I may have impersonated an officer by calling the tow company and say, yeah, that van for Leinhauser, that's all squared away. He brought us all the stuff, so he's free to take that van. So I went over and picked up my van, and, you know, it was all. But, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, it, like, I'm on medication, so all my medication was, like, in one little circle in the van. And I was like, so it's like they went through the van, whatever. But no big deal. The next morning, I called my brother, and I explained to him what happened. I thought it was police brutality. I thought it was excessive force. You call it whatever you want. You know, I mean, I was already in handcuffs. You know, they didn't need to do what they did, but, you know, yet again, you know, apparently, from what they say, I resisted arrest because I said, well, I really don't want to get in the car. So, you know, I guess I resisted arrest. So I went to I told my brother, and he said, you know what, he said, I'll come over and get you, but you're going to do a meeting. And I was like, okay. So he picked me up, and my first meeting was over at the Boyertown Inn in Boyertown, and this old guy there told me that it was the first drink that, no wait, before he said it, he said, you don't have to feel this way ever again. And I said, how's that, old man? And he said, it's the first drink they got you. And I laughed at him. I said, first drink, hell. I said, you're a moron, man. No, I said, I had plenty. And he said, well, if you didn't pick up the first one, you couldn't get drunk. Well, that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was like, wow, if I didn't pick up the first one, I can't get drunk. Well, I'm here to tell you that since that day, I haven't picked up the first one. I haven't gotten drunk. So, I mean, call it what you want, but for me, it's a, you know, it's a miracle because I drank every day. But that was the beginning, and, you know, going to AA, and, you know, it was suggested that I get a home group. It was suggested that I get a sponsor, and those are the things that I did. I started going to meetings on my own, because my brother took me to a couple of meetings, and you know, I thought that all meetings started at 7 o'clock because, you know, that's where they started over in Boyertown. So I just figured that was like an AA thing. Everything starts at 7 o'clock. So I went to the Quakertown group at 7 o'clock, and well, geez, they don't start till 8:30. So I was like, well, I'll be back. Well, apparently there was two guys there that were making coffee that night. One was Phil and the other was John. And they said, no, come on in, you know, sit down, tell us about yourself, you know. And it's like, Phil and John were there for my first meeting at the Quakertown group, and that's my home group. And it was amazing because they were there an hour and a half before the meeting, you know, and I didn't even know where the meeting was. So I was walking through the parking lot, and there's a state trooper there. And I was like, I figured, you know. So I asked him, and he's like, he was there for the Cub Scouts. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. So then I, you know, he said, I don't know, but maybe it's over there. So, you know, I found my way in, and, you know, I've been going to meetings ever since. But, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, had it not been for Phil and John, I don't know if I would have stayed, you know. But Phil told me when I came in that he wanted me to read at every meeting, that I would read something, whether it was How It Works or the preamble or something, but I would read something at every meeting. And when I came into AA, I wasn't that good of a reader. I can tell you that right now. But thanks to AA, I can read today pretty good. I'm not embarrassed or ashamed to read out loud anymore. You know, I was when I first came. I was, you know, I was not one of those guys that was like big on reading. I think I graduated high school with like an eighth grade reading level, and I think they, I was just one of those kids that they just passed on through. You know, because, like I say, I started drinking, I was 17 on a daily basis. I would go over to Jersey and get a case of beer and, you know, go back to school and catch that 40-cent lunch, you know, and then continue to drink all day. And, you know, that was, that's just the way it was. I mean, and then I continued that. And then on prom night, I got into two car accidents and, had a quarter pound of weed and a case of beer in the car. So I was like, we're not staying for this, you know. So I got out of the car, bent down my license plate, and I left the scene of that accident. Got rid of the weed, got rid of the beer, and then I went back to the police station, turned myself in. For that, I got a $500 fine, and I think that was the beginning of the suspensions on my license. But, you know, it's not something that I'm proud of, but, you know, it is what it is. So the very next day, I joined the Army, and I said, you know, I just got to get out of this town because it's what I got to do. So I joined the Army, and, you know, my mother was, she didn't want me to join the Army, you know. And this is kind of funny, you know, because I was thinking about this the other day. My brother is in the Navy. And my father was in the Navy, and I never knew that. You would have thought I didn't live in that house. I mean, these are the things that just weren't discussed. I mean, there was not a lot of discussion that went on. I mean, there was really no love or anything like that in my house. I mean, we drank all the time. It's like, you know, a lot of fights, a lot of arguments. But whatever. I mean, so I joined the Army, and my drinking, I figured a change of location would help me. But, yeah, all I did was drink in the Army. And I got out of there, and I got a job as a mechanic. And I was working at the County Line Mobile there at County Line 113, and I was there for 17 years, and we drank every day. We got out of, you know, whether it didn't make any difference what the day was, whether it was a good day, bad day, it was a day, and we drank. You know, I remember starting out that there weren't pictures on the license, and I was underage. So I borrowed my boss's ID because there weren't any pictures on it. The guy's like, wow, you're 25? I was like, yeah, hello. You know, it's like, whatever. But, you know, that was the beginning of my drinking. And then, you know, when I turned 21 in that bar, the bartender and the owner were really pissed off. But, you know, it is what it is. I wound up marrying the bar owner's daughter, and that was good. We got married in 83, and I thought it was a great marriage. I still love the girl to this day. I would have celebrated 38 years had I stayed married, but that was not the case. She was quite sickly. She had 6 miscarriages and 13 surgeries in our 13 years of marriage. And, you know, I continued to drink during that. And, it was just one of those things where I drank every day. So, you know, when I got the divorce, started hanging around the wrong people and got involved with some drugs. But, you know, that didn't last too long because I went to the Raven's Nest, and the bartender there said, Richard, what are you doing? You got powder coming out of your nose. You're out of control. You need to knock that stuff off. And that's all it took for me. Because, I respected what she had to say, and that was it. You know, and besides, it was interfering with my drinking. so I didn't do that for very long, and I just continued to drink. Like I said, when I got that DUI, and, I quit drinking for 90 days, that was good. And then, you know, like I said, picked up on that 91st day and then was off to the races. And I can tell you today that had it not been for, you know, that night, which at that time I thought was the worst night of my life. I can tell you that right now. I thought that was the worst night of my life. It turned out to be the best night of my life because it got me sober. I'm not sober today. If they would have just said, Rich, you know, come on, lighten up, calm down, you know, whatever. You know, I had to go to jail for a weekend, call me a pussy, whatever. That's two days in jail was enough for me. I'm not good with the whole jail thing. I kind of sort of like my freedom. They didn't want me to, read my big book out in the thing. I had to go to my cell at night. I was like, what? Can't I just, like, stay out? No. Where do you think you are, Club Med? I was like, no, but, you know, do I like have to go in there? It's like, you know, I mean, I didn't, it was March, and I think I had, my sneakers were my pillow, and that was it. And my big book, I read the big book while I was in there, and it's amazing. Like I said, that was enough for me, but I'm grateful today. I mean, you know, when I went to court for the DUI, I got the DUI in November, and I went to court in, I guess, March. But I had been going to AA from the beginning of this second DUI. So when I got there, I went up and I apologized to the cop, and then I thanked the cop. And for that, he took the 9 charges down to just 2. And eventually down to 1, which was the DUI, and that's all I got stuck with. And, you know, it's because of this program, because, you know, my sponsor is Denny, and he's here tonight, and I sponsor others, Dave and Brian are over there, and it's like, Liz is also my sponsor, and it's like, you know what, it's like, I try and work this program the best way I can, you know, and it's on a daily basis, you know, 24 hours at a time. I try not to get ahead of myself, I really do, you know, it's like, you know, 24 hours is enough, and sometimes 24 hours is too much, you got to break it down to, sometimes you got to break it down to a minute, you know, and the Serenity Prayer has bailed me out of many a jam, and it's like, you know, it's like, I say that Serenity Prayer, because, you know, if you could just get out of my head for 5 minutes, 5 seconds, just let me get out of my head, and, you know, God, can you just grant me a little bit of serenity, and, you know, it's amazing, you know, because that prayer has bailed me out of many a jam, you know, it's got me out of my head several times. I mean, it's incredible. When I first came in, you know, I was doing, they said to me when I first came in that, you know, if you drank 7 days a week, then you need a meeting 7 days a week. So I was going to 7 meetings a week, sometimes 8 or 9, you know, I think we'd do a doubleheader on Monday night, we'd do Children of Chaos, and then go down and do Living Sober. And I can tell you a little bit about the Living Sober book. It's what kept me sober that first year, because of the chapters that were in there, working the 24-hour program and the Serenity Prayer. Remembering your last drink, you know, eating something normally sweet. It's like all the things that I had a couple of graduation parties to go to that first year when I was sober, and I was like, how am I going to do this? You know, they were my nephews and my nieces, and it's like, you know, Uncle Rich drinks, you know, Uncle Rich is cool. I was always the cool uncle, you know what I mean? Because we didn't have any kids, and it's like, you know, so I spoiled the hell out of my brother's kids, and, you know, so I was really the cool uncle. But, you know, I didn't know how I was going to do it, and, well, it was suggested that I get there late, leave early, and don't park myself in. And that's what I did. And somehow or another, they didn't notice anything. Nobody said anything. And it's kind of funny, you know, nobody gives a damn whether I drink or not. You know, it's only me that thinks about that. And, you know, I was able to do it. And, you know, I've gone to, it was kind of funny, I was talking today somebody about, you know, when there was a dry wedding. Well, it wasn't dry once I got there, because I brought the van, and the van always had, you know, 2 cases of Miller Lite Stadium bottles on ice with a backup on Ready 5, because you never know when a party's going to happen. You just don't know. So, I mean, I always brought the party. So, you know, it was several weddings that were supposed to be dry weren't dry once Uncle Rich got there, but we had, you know, you just party out in the parking lot, and it's like a I was kind of a bad influence on just about everybody I came in association with, all my friends. And it's like, you know, I was constantly getting busted when I was a kid for underage drinking and, you know, at that time, small quantities of marijuana, whatever. But, you know, they kept the marijuana and never went on the ticket or anything like that. But, you know, they took our beer and, you know, I think I had a couple of, you know, whatever, $50 fines, no big deal, paid the fine and, you know, went about your day. And, but I remember, you know, I hear several speakers say that not every time they were drinking did they get in trouble, but every time they got in trouble, they were drinking. And that seems to be the case with me too, you know, because it seemed like I was always drinking, you know, but I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, I thank God for these steps, because, you know, I do realize today that I am powerless over alcohol, and my life will become real unmanageable real fast if I pick up a drink. You know, I mean, step two is, you know, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and I looked around the room, and there's a lot of smiling faces, and people were happy and laughing. I was like, what the hell is so funny, people? I didn't think it was funny, you know, you weren't in my shoes, you know, but, you know, I saw that, you know, there was something in AA that was attractive to me, and, you know, I was just saying to somebody the other day, they said that, somebody said that, I said to somebody, well, how long do I got to go to these meetings? And they said, until you want to. I said, what? Until you want to. What the hell kind of answer is that? You know what I mean? That's the AA answer, you know what I mean? It's like, everybody knows that eventually you're going to want to go to meetings. And, you know, and that's what happened. I wanted to go see my friends. I wanted to go on Monday nights to see my friends. I wanted to go on Thursday nights to see my friends. And, you know, I got a lot of friends in here. It was amazing. But, you know, it's just those answers that that they give you. It's like, but, you know, step three is turning your will over to a power greater than yourself. And I could do that. You know, I've been able to do that. And, you know, I have a God today. And he's amazing. You know, absolutely amazing. And it's one of those things where, you know, you might not have saw where he was working in your life and probably thought that he abandoned you somewhere along the way. And I thought that, you know, I couldn't understand why I didn't have any children. And, you know, my wife had 6 miscarriages. I didn't understand that, you know. That's a little rough pill to swallow. But, you know, it is what it is. And I know that there's 6 of them waiting up there for me when I get there. I mean, that's the way I got to look at it today. It was amazing. You know, once I got divorced, you know, I got with another girl, and I was going to, on a Wednesday afternoon, to break up with her. And I looked at her face and I said, you're pregnant. And she says, no, I'm not. I said, yes, you are. She said, no, I'm not. I said, yes, you are. I said, I might not have anything to show for it, but I know pregnant and you're pregnant. So went out and got a test, and sure enough, she was pregnant. So I didn't break up with her. And I moved her in, and she was with me for 15 years. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was, it is what it is. I have a beautiful daughter. She's 23 now. She hasn't seen her father drinking since she was 9. She really hasn't seen any arguing between her mother and her father, because, you know, going through these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out that, well, apparently I played a role in that relationship, and it wasn't all her fault. But, you know, and I made my amends to her, and, you know, I have a loving relationship with that woman today. You know, I love that. I love her, you know, because she's the mother of my daughter, and she's always going to be the mother of my daughter. And every year on my daughter's birthday, I send her a thank you for giving me my daughter, because, you know, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have a daughter, you know, and I guess if it wasn't for me, I wouldn't have a daughter either, but takes two. Apparently, you know, I forget about that, but Dave's wife reminded me of that it does take two. Because I was blaming her, and but whatever, you know. So, but you know, it's funny. I got she got a DUI, and I had to go pick her up in the middle of the night. And she's like, "Oh well, I guess this makes us even." And I said, "Not really." She's like, "Why?" I said, "Because I got 2, and you only have 1." She says, "Well, why doesn't that make us even?" I said, "Simple mathematics, you know. I still have 2, and you only have 1. It's like, whatever. But I think she might have been drunk, trying to do math. But then again, she is blonde, too, so, yeah. But anyhow, I'm just saying, you know, nothing personal. I'm just saying, you know, it could be a factor. I'm just saying. Yeah, but, you know, it's like, when I got sober, I changed my life, and my life started to change, and, you know, Denny said to me a long time ago, you know, when you work these steps, the steps will start working you. And that's exactly what happened to me. The steps started working me. And it's amazing because, you know, my life is totally different than what it was. Last Saturday, we had a picnic for St. Isidore's 50th anniversary. You know, Denny said he counted 67 people there at one time. I mean, what a great turnout, you know, great time. And, you know, it was amazing because, you know, this year with the COVID and everything like that, you know, it's been a fiasco. Nobody can do what they want to do. And, you know, we really couldn't get a picnic together because of the way the food is and all that other stuff. But you know what? We wound up getting a food truck and we had a good time. You know, the weather held out and it was a good time. And I was grateful for that. And it was good to see the friends and you know, absolutely, you know, a great time. And these are the things that have come along in AA, you know. I continue each day to put one foot in front of the other and try to do the next right thing or the next thing right. You know, it's what I was taught. You know, Jimmy King, who's my grand sponsor, who's passed, you know, it's his date's coming up October the 7th. And, you know, what a great man. And I was able to speak at the Merchtown anniversary for him. And, you know, what an honor to speak at an anniversary event. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. I mean, the crowd was wild, and I mean, it was a big crowd, and it was just, I had never been to, you know, something like that before, and, you know, I never spoke at one, you know. I mean, it was really, really nice, and I've had a lot of good things. I mean, a lot of great things have happened for me. You know, I got teeth. You know, that's something I never thought that would ever happen, you know, but I got the implants and, you know, brand new teeth, and it's good. It's kind of funny that the dentist said to me, she said, what are you going to have for your first meal? And I said, I've been cheating the whole way, you know, I wasn't waiting to eat. I said, you know, I said, look at this body. I said, I got to eat every day. I said, I can't wait to eat, you know, I'm like, you know, whatever. But that was amazing. I'm driving a 2017 Ford F-150, and you know, the loan went through on that. I paid my bills today, and I was like, what's up with that? You know, paying them like before they're due, and I'm like, wow, it's like responsibility, and it's amazing. You know, this all came with AA. You know, I mean, I've been fortunate, and you know, I still work on a lot of cars for a lot of people in the rooms, and I still have the following from Richard Sunoco, and that's amazing in itself because I started that back up in 2012, and since then it's just done nothing but grow, and it's incredible. But it's all because of these steps. You know, it's step four is making that searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. And that's something that you want to do. You know, you want to find out who you are. And Denny said to me many times that more will be revealed. Thanks, Den. More has been revealed and constantly gets revealed on a daily basis because, you know, I forget about a lot of stuff. And, you know, I didn't have anything written down for what I wanted to speak about tonight or anything like that. I just figured, you know, I'm going to pray during how it works, or I pray during the steps and the set-aside prayer and ask to God to speak through me. You know, I don't, you know, this is not something, I'm very honored and humbled to be here tonight. You know, I mean, this is a privilege for me to speak in front of you guys. I mean, I was blown away when I was first asked. I did not think that I was worthy or any of that stuff, because you know, I just, this is not about me, and when it becomes about me, it's never good. You know, it because if I can make it about you, it's always better. You know, because I'm helping somebody. You know, and it's like, you know, when I'm helping you, I can't be concerned about me. And but that doesn't mean that I need to forget about me entirely. You know, I have to remember that I need to take care of me, or I can't take care of you. You know, and that's the thing. And I take care of myself by, you know, trying every day to do the next right thing. I pray in the morning. I pray in the evening. I pray all day long. You know, it's, you never know when you're going to, you know, what's going to happen. I can tell you that I have a trust and a belief in a power greater than me that's just absolutely incredible, because I don't waver. I don't waver anymore. You know, I was talking today about fear, and it's like the only fear I have is pretty much, you know, driving with Luke. You know, other than that, you know, I'm pretty good, you know, but driving with Luke, he likes to throw his car sideways, and that's just not normal. But, you know, he also has a drift car. And I mean, but, you know, it's, I don't do that, but, you know, he did that before he had the drift car, and it was my car, and it was in the snow, and we're going sideways, and I'm going like crazy. You know, it's like, yeah, it's not normal, but, you know, he's a fun guy, and, you know, but, you know, whatever. So I did that searching and fearless moral inventory to myself, and then I admitted to God, to myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. And, you know, I took that to a priest because, you know, they got to take it to the hole. And I remember this one thing that I wasn't going to let anyone ever know about me, and was that I had asked a girl to have an abortion for me. And no one was ever going to find that out about me. You know, no, because I was embarrassed and ashamed, and well, it turns out that I'm not the only one, you know, because I thought I was the only one, you know, and just the guilt that was, it was killing me, you know, it was absolutely killing me, but nobody was ever going to find that out about me, because I was never going to let anybody know that, you know, but, you know, the secrets only keep you sick. And you got to get rid of your secrets. And my friend Jennifer likes to say, just because I carry it well doesn't mean it's not heavy. You know, and, you know, it's like, and each time we share it, it gets a little lighter. And that's what it's all about. You know, I mean, we can do this one day at a time, one step at a time. Because, you know, if you look back, my sobriety date is November the 21st, 2007. And for that, I am eternally grateful. But you know, I was listening to Jack Sullivan again today, and he says that you can't get here from where we were. You just can't. But yet again, everybody here knows that we can. One day at a time, we can get to here. But you can't get here, you know, without that one day at a time. It takes that work. It takes the steps. You know, every morning I got to admit that I'm powerless. Every stinking morning. You know what I mean? It's not like all of a sudden I regain power overnight. Every morning I wake up and I say, are you still powerless? Well, you better be. Because you know what? It doesn't take much. You know, it really doesn't. You know, and I know that. You know, but I took my fifth step to a priest, and you know, Denny and I worked with the step sixes and seven, and it's like, you know, the shortcomings and the character defects, and you know, yeah, God takes them, He'll relieve them, but then He's going to bring right back to you, and what are you going to do with them? You know what I mean? Some of your defects are actually assets. You know, sometimes they're a defect, sometimes they're an asset. It all depends on how it's used. You know, step eight, not that big of a deal. You know what I mean? People want to get all crazy about step eight, but it's, you know, all you're doing is making a list. You know, doing anything other than that, you know, you're making that list. And you pretty much made that list on your fourth step. So, you know, I mean, step nine, making the amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, is that's the big one, you know? And I remember going to my ex-wife and, making my amends to her, and she said to me that she was proud of me. And she said that she didn't know I was an alcoholic until 3 years after we were divorced. And I said, but I drank every day. She says, yeah. She said, but did you know that you couldn't go 3 days without a beer? I said, no. She said, you couldn't, even when you had your appendix out. I was like, wow. I didn't realize that, but apparently, you know, I couldn't go 3 days without drinking. And she pointed that out to me. But, you know, I did the graveside amends to my parents. They're both gone. You know, my mother was up every night when I got home. She was at the kitchen table waiting for her baby to come home. So, you know, I mean, we don't realize, you know, what we take from our parents. You know, when we're not home, when we're out there, well, when I was out there causing a ruckus and getting busted and doing this and that, and, you know, just not living the right way. I mean, you know, I always say that my parents were my first sponsors, and they taught me right from wrong. And they taught me good and bad. And, you know, it was up to me. But, you know, they did the best they could, and I know that today. You know, my mother was, she was an incredible, incredible, incredible woman. When I got to Sunoco Station on 309, I was coming up from Souderton, and I stopped at the light at 309 Tollgate, and I looked to my left, and in the middle bay of that Sunoco Station was an angel that said, "You're the one," and it was my mother. I was like, "What?" I looked over again, "You're the one." I had a chiropractor appointment, so I went and did that, and I came back, and I said that, you know, is the owner here? And they're like, "No, we'll be in the morning." But I was like, so I went home, and I told my wife about it, and I was like, "You're not going to believe this." I said, but, you know, I was coming home tonight, and, you know, I looked into the center bay, and my mom is there that said, "You're the one." I said, I don't know. So the bay was dark, you know, and so the next day I went over to that Sunoco Station, and I talked to the owner, and I said, "I'm going to lease your base," because that's what I thought it was. And he said, "Can't sublet a lease," and I know that to be true. I said, "Well," I said, "I'm going to work for you." He said, "I'm not hiring." And the whole time, "You're the one," is going through my mind. "You're the one, you're the one." I'm like, so I said to the guy, I said, "Look, I'm sorry that I bothered you." You know, I shook his hand, and I turned and I was walking away, and he said, "The whole place is for sale." I said, "What?" He said, "The whole place is for sale." I went back and I said to him, I said, "Can you do me a favor?" He said, "Sure." I said, "Can you do nothing until you hear back from me?" He shook my hand. He said, "As a gentleman, to a gentleman, I won't do anything until I hear back from you." I called my father. I told him what had happened. And it was absolutely amazing because we wound up buying that Sunoco Station. And I was there for 10 years. My father passed in 02. And my mother came through that day to take him. And I was drunk that day. Every time they went down for a pint of beer, I went down. Or every time they went down for a pint of blood, I went down for a pint of beer. And my father passed. That was Martin Luther King Day, 02. We were planning to go to spring training that year. The tickets came in the very next day. So I got on a plane, I went to Clearwater, and I was down there, and I said, "Well, let me go check on Jack Russell Stadium." And I'm driving down Drew Street, and I'm looking for Greenwood Street, and I got all the way to the beach. I said, "Where the hell is Greenwood Street?" I turned around, and I got all the way to 19, and I was like, "Where the hell is Greenwood Street?" I turned around again. Greenwood Street was renamed Martin Luther King Boulevard. I was like, "Really?" Yeah, my dad died Martin Luther King Day, and they renamed the street Martin Luther King Day. And I was like, it was just like too many things. And, you know, I mean, that's the way God works in my life. You know, it's been an amazing, amazing run that I've had with getting sober, staying sober. COVID sucked, still sucks. But, you know, I got through COVID one day at a time. And I got through COVID by calling up my friends and saying, you want to come over to my house and we'll do maybe a spaghetti dinner or something like that. So I had like 17 people in my living room for a spaghetti dinner on a Thursday night because that was our meeting night, you know. But we had to stay in contact with one another, you know. And, I mean, it was so bad, you know, my friend Denise, her mom died during COVID, and they couldn't even have a funeral for her mom. And I just couldn't imagine that, you know. I mean, COVID has been rough on us all, but you know what? I got through it sober, and for that I'm grateful, You know, I mean, I continue to do step 10 every day. You know, I call it a fourth step, but, you know, they call it step 10. But I used to write it out every day. I stopped writing it, but, I still do it. You know, and step 11, prayer and meditation, I can tell you right now, meditation for me turns into sleep. I'm not really good with it, but, it does turn into sleep for me. And, this is step 12 here tonight, you know, carrying the message. I hope somebody got something out of what I had to say. I really don't know. But, I can tell you that I close every time I speak with the last two sentences from page 457, which read, "From experience, I realize that I cannot go back and make a brand new start. But through AA, I can start from now and make a brand new end." Thanks for letting me share.
Let's give Rich another round of